Hello, West Liberty. This is Liam Peklinski, and you are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. And today, continuing with our passionately vocal series, I am here with our marketing department and web designer, Mr. Thomas Eslack.
Hello, everyone.
So, Mr. Eslack, I guess, you know, you've been here for quite a while, and what kind of work have you so far done with the university with web development, and what kind of pages and different things have you created?
Well, I work a lot on site performance, program page layouts, feature implementation, you know, things like that. And when I talk about those things, they're all related to what ends up on the .edu site. So that's primarily what I'm working on.
So mostly on, like, not really like Sakai, but more the homepage of West Liberty, or do you do like the entire website?
No, I don't touch Sakai. I don't touch things that are related to what IT does. Anything I work on is related exclusively to westliberty.edu. That's our primary web presence.
Do you work with Jared Thompson on, I guess, he's also, would he be under marketing as well?
He was for pretty much the whole time I've been here, and he recently moved over to working as a faculty member in the digital media design area.
I see, yeah. And so you're mostly due to just the design and the aesthetics of how the website looks rather than, I guess, the actual building of it, so to speak.
Yeah, a lot of that. There's also some of the core functionality that is affected in doing that sometimes, because there's a lot of, you know, back-end code that needs to be dealt with sometimes. There's some security and bug fixes that need to happen. And when we get into feature implementation, like one feature implementation that was a good project to work on early on was a YouTube playlist. So in perusing the possible solutions for YouTube playlist implementation on the site, there's a lot of plugins that can handle that. Sometimes they're cost prohibitive, and sometimes they're resource heavy. And what I mean by resource heavy is that sometimes those things take forever to download, or they just do too much for what you really need them for. And so what we really needed was something that we just have a YouTube playlist that we want to pull in and just allow the user to select what video they want to watch, and then control how many videos pop up as a suggested feature that shows up after you're done watching the video. So as an example of a feature implementation, you know, the YouTube playlist was a project that was, I feel, kind of helpful, because you know, I was able to kind of bring in something that was kind of lightweight, pulls in directly from the YouTube player API. And then it's a lot of programming. It's a lot of back-end programming. Mm-hmm. But you can also customize what the front-end looks like, so it's somewhat user-friendly. And you don't have to get into all the overloaded
the really
rigmarole, like, that comes with some of the other stuff that you would just plug in.
The embedded crap that goes along with that, mm-hmm. with implementing something like that. Yeah. I guess that'll lead me into, like, what are some of the most challenging things you've experienced in this field so far?
Well, there are projects that you get really deep into, like some of the nuances mm-hmm. of. There are two challenging projects that I've gotten into previously. One, oddly enough, was a domain switch for another school that I'm maybe talking about, but
for somewhere else.
We switched over from one domain name to another. Now, and it was a .edu. So switching over from one .com name to another .com name, like, you know, Liam.com to, you know, your new name.com, mm-hmm. isn't a big deal, because you just buy two domain names and you just redirect all your traffic from one domain name to the other. Doing that with a .edu is challenging, because you have this organization that you have to work with called EduCause, and they control who gets to have a domain name and who doesn't under the .edu high-level domain process.
So they keep it more strictly for, like, only, like, universities and schools and academic scholarly sites,
right.
I guess.
That's
so
correct.
You can't just kind of, like, be like, oh, I want an EDU site, and they have to go through the proper channels.
Yeah,
no schmo can just get it.
Yeah, you're basically dealing with a bunch of regulations there, so mm-hmm. we were able to, I guess this didn't do anything, work with them and have a limited time frame where we were able to have two .edu domain names. And then by working with search engine optimization and controlling how people bookmark the sites.
And get
familiar
to
with
the
bookmarks,
site, yeah, yeah.
And then redirect all of our web traffic from one domain to the new one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of technical craziness, but we were able to move all of our traffic to the new domain without losing any of our traffic. So that was a bit of a, it was challenging, because it was a bit of a nail biter, because we weren't sure how we were going to pull it off, but we did. And then the other challenging project that was a lot of fun, actually, was I got to work on a project which was a text to vote campaign, which was attached to a student art exhibition project. So we created a People's Choice voting text to vote application, and you could use your phone to text in what art piece you wanted to vote for. And it's a little project that kind of had a viral impact, because you could share that with your friends of yours, like, you're only allowed one vote, you know? So you're like, oh, well, I want people to vote for this artwork that
so
I really
you
like. So you're like,
to,
eh, you know, get your buddies to vote for this.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a funny story attached to that, because we had all these hits coming from Bogota, Colombia. And as I was watching these come in, I kept thinking somebody was scamming or spamming the voting system. And then later we found out that we had a student that was from there, and he had a family that owned a hotel down there. And the hotel owner was, like, his dad or something. And he kept saying, like, hey, you know, my kid's in this contest, vote for his artwork. And all the visitors at the hotel just started, like, sharing it. And, like,
so it wasn't, like, just award. Campus, like, it was, like, he sent it out, and all these people at this hotel were like, oh, I guess we'll just vote for it then. And
yeah, yeah.
Did he get, like, disqualified
no,
for that, or did
no.
he win?
That was those were the parameters. Share it with your friends, tell everybody about it, and...
So he got, like, over, like, well, a bunch of people
in
the hotel.
Yeah, he won in his category, and that was the whole purpose of the whole thing. Like,
I guess he used it to his advantage.
Yeah, he figured out the system, and it worked out. And it was cool, because, you know, he had, like, different categories, like a fine art, and then he ironically won in the web category.
Hmm.
So he's like, oh, I understand the system. I'm going to use it to my, you know, benefit, and he certainly did. He ended up working at an agency that was, oddly enough, an agency that I think our SEO vendor, West Liberty's SEO vendor, is now working with, or something like that now.
Was he more like studio art, or like graphic designer, like was it like that field?
No, the kid that won that contest, he's a web developer.
Oh, okay. Oh, so it was like a web development, like, art, like, hey, vote for this guy's you know, design site or something. That's
yeah,
cool.
Like, this art contest, they had categories like fine art, they had illustration, graphic design, and web design and video.
Was it like Madfest?
It was kind of like that, but they called it Visions and Voices. So I kind of gave it away a little bit. But West Liberty has an agreement with this school. It's Pittsburgh Technical College. So I used to work there for about 10 years teaching, and then another 10 years roughly doing their digital marketing. So I was their digital marketing director. So I did all their design and web development.
I see.
That was an early project. It was a really great project. It got a lot of attention for their design program.
What like initially got you into, I guess, web development and kind of being in this field that you're in now with marketing and web development?
Well, I think it's a weird story. I often think about this, but my first exposure to doing any computer art was when I was a little kid. I think I must have started doing this when I was a little, like 8 to 10 years old. Or I don't even know how old it was, but it was when the Texas Instruments home computers first came out. And that had to be a long time ago. I don't even know how old I was. Like I said, I must have been 8 or 10 years old.
It was just something cool that you kind of got into.
Yeah, and I learned how to make animated graphics programs using BASIC. BASIC is an acronym for Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instructional Code.
And I actually didn't know there was an acronym for BASIC. I thought it was just like BASIC, and that was just like the first coding language that was just like developed. I didn't know it was an actual
Well, there's
acronym.
A lot of programming cool. languages that were developed like in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah. I get, yeah. Where the computers would take up like the entire, like, just
yeah.
everything
the
in
whole,
the union.
The whole cafeteria.
Yeah.
There, yeah.
And
it was like they were on punch cards and stuff.
And it was all just ones and zeros at that mm-hmm. at that point. So
yeah,
what would, I mean, like, would that actually have been like, what coding languages would be punch cards from the 50s and 60s?
I think there was one called Fortran, and I think there's one called COBOL that some of those might still be used, but those are all like systems that would be like, here's an interesting differentiation where you get into like people that are programmers that work on systems, mm-hmm. like operating systems, and some of those folks are in the business department. I worked with somebody over at PTI who teaches here now, Gail Jesse, who works on this kind of stuff, and I don't touch any of that stuff. And you get into like banking software and Oracle databases, and I don't know anything about that stuff.
That's like, that's, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. That's mm-hmm. that to me is a little bit far afield. I'm a little too, into the right brain, but also on the left brain side. So I'm like, it needs to have a visual and creative component for me to.
It needs to have some sort of creative aesthetic to it,
yeah.
for you to want to be more interested in that field. It's not just ones mm-hmm. and zeros. There is a rhyme, a reason of why you're wanting to code.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, well, when I got into that as a small kid, I had, a lot of reasons why I couldn't go outside. I was asthmatic, so I got into like computers and music and art and anything I could do that I was. Wasn't able to socialize very much, so I got into like all this stuff.
Didn't have to leave. You could just do it to your heart's content.
Yeah, I was like, okay, there's a computer, I'm going to mess with that. There's a piano, I'm going to start messing with that thing, and then I'm going to start making pictures and all this kind of stuff. So that's what I did with a lot of my time when I was a young person. So a little biographical information as to how I got into this kind of stuff. So, early on, I got into like, okay, I like to draw pictures. I figured out how to make graphics animations on the computer, and then years and years later, I kind of let it go because, my parents would tell me all this computer thing's just going to go away.
all this technology, it's just a fad for right now, but it's not going to be a big deal here in the future when it.
Right.
Everything at that time that was more physical, like physical film, physical, mm-hmm. I guess, when it comes to like computer technologies, it's just gotten so advanced to the point where,
it's all data now.
It's not just a, cool, like, what's the word? Not like fad, but like a, I can't think of the word.
Well, it's people are revaluing it now because, you know, now we have all this technology and we can make it almost look like there's a video of a person there. Like you could create a video that makes it actually look like, you know, Joe Biden is sitting there hanging out with you, drinking a beer or something.
With AI?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's wild stuff.
It's very believable. But with all the technology, people are really going back to, like, handmade aesthetics and actually trying to figure out how do you make something with a block of wood, or how do you crochet things, you know?
And I think that is so cool and so great that, like, we're actively trying to make physical art and physical things again, because we have gotten away from it over the past decade or so when it comes to making things with your hands as opposed to letting technology just make it, you know?
You familiar with the great and terrible flood mythology?
I don't believe so.
that's what I call it. But it's this idea that, you know, the city of Atlantis was, like, flooded, and now it's, like, this some kind of city that exists at the bottom of the ocean. But there's this idea that, you know, somehow we've had all this knowledge and technology, and then a flood comes along and wipes out civilization, and now we don't know how to do anything anymore. And that's what people think about, you know, the Great Pyramids or the Stonehenge and things like, how do they make these rocks move? You know, these ancient cultures figured it out, but somehow we can't manage to
grasp
how they were able to do it.
They figured it out, and then that knowledge got lost over time, and now we're trying to figure out how to do it again.
Yeah.
I that's a tale as old as time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Losing knowledge, figuring out how to get it back, getting it back, then losing it again.
Yeah.
You know, future generations are going to probably try to figure out why we were making memes right now of random things that make no sense. Trying to decipher that.
Well, we're so caught up in technology that someday we're going to forget how to make toast.
If we don't have a toaster, we can't make bread heat up. We don't know how to do that. But I actually think we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about the musical venue that you've kind of been in, and some other aspects. But this has been, so far, the Academic Affairs. You are listening to 91.5 WGLZ. West Liberty. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. I'm Liam, and we'll be right back. Hello, West Liberty. We are back. I'm Liam, and I'm here with Mr. Thomas Eslack, our marketing department and also web designer on campus. So we're back. And you are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. So, Mr. Eslack, we were talking a lot about some of the projects, previous projects you've done, and how you kind of initially got into web development. You were talking about how you also dabbled in some music with piano and different things when you were younger. Music, how do you do mostly, like, just kind of producing or working with, like, either Pro Tools or behind a mixing board or something, making music? What instruments can you play?
I pretty much stick to guitar. I play a little bit of keyboard things, but it's a bit embarrassing for me to talk about music, knowing that there are real musicians around campus, knowing, you know, that know far more than I do about this stuff, but it's been a preoccupation of mine next to my visual art career. But what I try to do normally is bring them together, because I know music has been a bit of a distraction next to my other visual art pursuits. But you know, I played Little League music for a while.
Little League music?
Yeah, a few bands here and there, and a belly dance band for like 3 years, and you know, so. And, you know, I write pieces, and if I write music, then I try to write for, like, sculptural installations and try to incorporate that into sculptures and things like that.
Sculptures, like, mm-hmm. So you do physical art as well.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of physical art are you into, like, sculpting? And do you do any kind of, like, you know, drawing or stuff like that, I guess? What kind of previous projects or experience have you had? Or is it more or less just a hobby?
It's really kind of a preoccupation for me. So it really goes back to me trying to create something that's interactive, mm-hmm. right? So the web development work, it's really based on interaction, right? Trying to create something that's engaging.
It's all
engaging.
Based on interaction.
Yeah, it totally is. And the music, it's interactive, right? Mm-hmm. The musical experience is totally interactive with whoever you're playing the music for. That's a relationship between the player and the listener. There's a back and forth there. Mm-hmm. And then the artwork that I make is, I try to make as interactive as possible. So I try to create things that you can actually touch and manipulate, or there's a sort of a relationship between you creating a sound and then that sound being picked up by a microphone, and then there's like a little bit of a visual relationship between the sound and something happening in the sculpture, or there's like a handle that you can grab and like manipulate the movements within a sculpture that way. Mm-hmm. So and that all goes back to childhood and being isolated a lot and that kind of thing, so it's like sort of like a mechanism by which I can create some kind of a dialogue between, you know, myself and the world beyond me and that kind of thing.
That tangibility adds that anchor point for any kind of art, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that was a very cool and deep way to express yourself, but also have whoever you're trying to be impacted by your art,
mm-hmm.
to have that connection to it, because it feels more, you know, tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, aside from some of that stuff, have you ever had any interest in video game coding?
You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, video games are probably the most advanced form of, like, digital and interactive art that you could probably
Because it's
have.
Everything.
It is.
It has to do with that.
It's music, it's storytelling, it's immersive. There's a tremendous amount of coding and development, and the teams involved in getting a video game to launch are dense. They're just
just
enormous. There's so much
it's
involved.
Not a team, it's an army of people.
It is, yeah.
Working on games.
When I say teams, it's plural. It's like
multiple different teams.
Yeah, and the it's like I used to want to get into filmmaking. Person who was a mentor of mine when I was a kid taught me how to make molds and do prosthetics and things like that.
Oh.
And I got really cool. into that. And I wanted to get into filmmaking a while back, but I would always be astonished at just the number of people at the end credits that it takes just to make a film.
Hmm.
But it's probably five times as long the number of people that it
for
takes
a game
to
development
make
team,
a
yeah.
really sophisticated piece of video game. But I never felt compelled to get into video games. I was really more interested in trying to create something that, because my reason for doing that is because the subject or the product that you're creating, I had difficulty with. Now, there is a great gaming company called Shell Games in Pittsburgh, and they create educational games. And there are a few companies that do create educational games. There's more and more of them now, actually.
What kind of, like, educational games? Would it be, like, any kind of educational games, or would it be something specific to some sort of education, I guess?
I'm not sure. It's probably geared toward, like, younger kids, you know, like, math games, or, like, you know, science or something like that. I'm not really sure. I don't really get too far into it. I've really like kind of gotten far away from
that whole field.
The
yeah.
gaming aspect. I think the type of coding that you get into with gaming is a little different from what you get into with web development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a some areas where they merge together, but the web development stuff kind of spoke to me a little sooner than the gaming stuff. Probably because you can speak to an audience more immediately with the coding stuff, with the web development stuff. You can set up a website, get some code together, and start talking to people kind of immediately and get an understanding of whether or not your messaging is having an impact. The whole idea of measuring your results is interesting to me. You can develop something and impact someone's business model pretty immediately by understanding a little bit of how you can develop content and develop a user flow to impact how somebody learns about their business and how you can kind of guide users and clients to convert on whatever it is they're trying to you know, get somebody interested in mm-hmm. on their website. So that kind of stuff intrigued me a lot more than I think probably because my dad was an independent business owner. I knew a lot of people who were, and there was always a need to figure out how to market to people. And so that was a dialogue, I think, that kind of intrigued me a lot.
Getting that message out to people in the audience that you're trying to get that message out to.
And how do you communicate effectively mm-hmm. using various tools?
I actually am a marketing minor. Mm-hmm. Haven't quite had any classes in it yet, but I'm very excited to get into learning how to market and market myself, because my dad is self-employed. Had to learn how to market yourself mm-hmm. and do that whole thing. And I'm a freelance, you know, video editor, and mm-hmm. I'm a drone pilot and different things like mm-hmm. that. So I have to kind of market myself to get work, and that can be a very challenging thing if you don't really know how to do it.
Yeah, and learning it on the job is very challenging. However, a lot of times that trial by fire is a very effective way to.
That's how I've learned everything is just jumping into the deep end and hoping you don't drown, but you're feeling like you are.
Yeah, yeah. I guess since I'm live on a college radio format. I guess I should say that whoever's listening, don't be afraid to make mistakes.
No, you know, absolutely not.
Making a mistake is stressful, and it's no fun. But what you do learn in making a mistake is what not to do, and you learn what not to do very, very well. You're acutely aware of what the pitfalls are. And you become even more aware of how to fix mistakes and how to do things properly. And you learn about, you know, due diligence and how to develop better systems and to develop ways of doing things that help you avoid future mistakes and to make processes that yield much, much better outcomes. A lot of times, much better than you would if you went through a really isolated and very protected learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, basically, if you're, you know, like if you, your first time without training wheels and you hit a tree, and it's like, okay, well, I know to avoid the tree next time, and I'm going to make damn sure I don't hit that tree. You know,
you learn
that really, really well.
Yeah, if you screw up real bad, you're gonna remember that screw up, and you're gonna be like, I'm not gonna do that again.
Yeah,
I've had so many different times where I've like broke something when it comes mm-hmm. to like, you know, either editing or with my drone. Mm-hmm. I have flown my drone into so many different trees, broke it, had to fix it. You know, you just learn. But I guess on that note, we will close up this session. I thank you so much for coming on with me today. This has been really, really fun. So thank you there, Mr. Mr. Eslack.
Thank you, Liam. It's been great. Thank you for having
me
on.
Absolutely. This has been the Academic Affairs section on our Passionately Vocal series. You are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. I'm Liam, and we are College Radio. We are Passionately Vocal. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.